This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 333, for the weekend of October 26th through October 28th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to, what is this? Oh, yeah, Backseat Box Office, a show where we talk about movies, TV, and other stuff that we might find interesting, and we hope you do, too. So, Art, how's it going over there?
It's going good. I hope people haven't missed us too much, and now we're back. Yay!
Yes, we are back. As always, hollow apologies for missing the last 2 weeks, but real life, get in the way, blah, blah, blah. And in speaking of blah, 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 first part of the show is we talk about what happened at the box office last week. Oh, there it is. Okay. So, we missed the last 2 weekends. So, this weekend, or last weekend, I'm going to talk about October 19th through October 20th, 2018. Here's your top five. At number one, we have the only new release we're talking about, Halloween, 2018 version of Halloween. $76.2 million. Per screen average of $19,405. Oh boy, the budget column says 10. $10 million.
Yep.
Wow, no horror there in the being in the black.
Wait. How much did Jamie Lee Curtis get paid? That sounds like her entire – it's what she should have been paid, all right there. I mean, did she do it as a favor? What is going on here?
I really can't speak to that.
I don't even – it just maybe it's blowing my mind.
Maybe she's getting points. Who knows? Anyways. All right. So at number two, we have A Star Is Born, the 2018 version, at $19 million in its third week release. At number three, we have Venom, 2018. Thanks for reminding us. $18 million. That it's in its third week release. The budget, by the way, $100 million. 10 times what Halloween. Number four, we have Goosebumps 2, Haunted Halloween at $9.7 million. And that's in its second week release. And at number five, we have First Man, Oscar bait First Man, $8.3 million. And that's in its second week release. And so there is your top five.
So interestingly, I was looking at this. I was looking back at, you know, what came out in the weeks that we missed. And 3 weeks ago, well, we talked about A Star Is Born and Venom. Mm-hmm. So we missed Goosebumps, First Man, and Bad Times at the El Royale. Mm-hmm. And those ones that came out last week are all below the ones that came out the week before. So I think that's interesting. And I don't know. Venom, which was getting kind of panned in the reviews, is doing really well. Number one last week, number one the week before. It's already over budget. And like I said, I saw it and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So critics be damned. I think it was a good movie.
All right. So, I didn't see it, so I got nothing to say. All right. So, that's going to do it for our look at last week's box office. So now let's start segment number two, and that's what's coming out in the theater this weekend. So, Art, how are we going to decide which movie to talk about?
Well, we got only one movie breaking the threshold, that's how we're going to decide.
All right.
Hunter Killer breaks the threshold, and I'm reading it. Yay! No.
All right.
We have Hunter Killer. Rated 36% on the tomato meter, absolutely rotten. 45 reviews counted, 16 fresh, 29 rotten. 86% want to see it out of 730 user ratings. Deep under the Arctic Ocean, American submarine captain Joe Glass, do you remember Glass Joe? Anyway, Gerard Butler, Olympus Has Fallen, 300, is on the hunt for a U.S. sub in distress when he discovers a secret Russian coup is in the offing.
Offing, yeah.
Threatening to dismantle the world order. Captain Glass must now assemble an elite group of Navy SEALs to rescue the kidnapped Russian president and sneak through enemy waters to stop World War III. Rated R for violence and some language. Genres action, adventure, drama, mystery, and suspense. Directed by Donovan Marsh. Written by Jamie Moss and Aaron Schmidt. Runtime 120 minutes. Whoa. Yeah. So we have Gerard Butler, Gary Oldman, Common, Linda Cardellini. Those are the people I recognize.
Yeah, not a lot of people in this one.
No.
I mean, it's an old school sub movie, apparently.
I have not even seen the previews for this.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen the previews for this either.
And I'm usually down for a sub movie. You know, I saw a bunch. Yeah, I mean, you know, was it K-19, The Widowmaker, and Hunt for Red October, and what was the one with Denzel and Gene Hackman?
Is that Crimson Tide?
Maybe. No. Yeah, I don't remember. But yeah, I'm pretty down for a sub movie, but I don't know. This one's not grabbing me, but I guess I'd have to actually see the trailer first.
No, there was a lesser-known sub-movie that I think I talked about. So now I got to look up Jude Law on IMDb to remind myself what it was. Black Sea.
No, I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's a bunch of out-of-work seamen, I guess.
Okay. That is the proper term?
I know. That they kind of get their hands on their own sub and they're going to go treasure hunting type thing for all, you know, for salvage type thing. But they have to go to a dangerous.
I do remember you talking about that.
Dangerous part of the ocean, and then they have to get back without being detected or whatever. But yeah, it's hardcore, man. It's a 6.4 on the IMDb scale, but I enjoyed it.
I feel like Gerard Butler's star is on the decline.
Well, let's just see. Let's see what Rotten Tomatoes says about that. All right, so let's look at all the movies. Okay, so Hunter Killer, 35%. Den of Thieves, 40%. Geostorm, 13%. Family Man, 13%. He was a producer on that one. Family Man, he was a producer. Sorry about that, guys. Okay, 15% Gods of Egypt, he played Set. 91% How to Train Your Dragon 2. Olympus Has Fallen, 48%. Movie 43, 4%. Playing for Keeps, 5%. Chasing Mavericks, 32%. I think that was that a surfing movie? Machine Gun Preacher, 28%. Coriolanus, 92%. But it made $0.5 million. And How to Train Your Dragon, 98%. Bounty Hunter, 12%. Gamer, 28%. Rock and Roll, 59%. 300, 60%.
Mm-hmm.
He was also the narrator in Shadow Company, 86%. So, yeah, the data kind of bears it out a little bit.
This is a
wait for video for me. What do some of the critics think? Well, it's Barry Hertz from the Globe and Mail. The Tom Clancy-like plot is disposable and dated, and the action, when it does arrive, is quiet enough to send the most insomnia-plagued of audiences to sleep. Oh, and here's another one. This is a fresh one with a callback to something we just talked about. The film's second half kicks in the gear and plays out like a moderately efficient popcorn thrill ride, even if it's not on the level of sub-thrillers like Crimson Tide or The Hunt for Red October. So it was Crimson Tide.
Okay, here's a good one. Elizabeth Weitzman from The Wrap. You know those DVDs that sit in the giant Walmart bin? The kind of movies you usually dumped unceremoniously into theaters in January, and maybe if you're going stir-crazy, you take a chance and find yourself happily surprised? Hunter Killer is one of those.
Oh, that's a fresh one, though.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's the $5 surprise in the Walmart bin.
Wow. So bargains. So anyways. Oh, yeah. and someone, I always love point systems. So not really news or anything, but James Berardinelli. Hunter Killer won't win any awards for acting or writing, but generates suspense when it needs to and tells an engrossing tall tale. So 3 out of 4 stars. And then we go to Andrew Parker from The Gate. It's a flavorless, unoriginal, but occasionally charming bit of suspense in the tenor of a Tom Clancy knockoff. 5.5 out of 10. So I wonder what point gave it what bullet point gave it the 0.5 rating. But anyways. Yeah. So Hunter Killer.
No.
All right. So that's going to do it for our look at the movies coming out in this weekend, or one movie. And, you know, this weekend's really light. Next weekend is going to be pretty good. So that's what they call foreshadowing. All right. So, Art, let's move on over to Share Time. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been up to. And since we haven't recorded for 3 weeks, spoiler, I'm probably going to disappoint you, but hopefully Art will bring it home. But we have a voicemail from Ted. So we're going to play that for you right now.
Hey, Vaxi. Box office, this is Ted calling in with what I've been watching. I haven't really been watching too much. Let's see. I had to go to a movie at a certain time on Friday night. I had some time to kill, so I just went to the theater and, you know, whatever movie was playing, I went to. So I saw Night School. I enjoyed it. It's not, you know, it's not any great movie or anything like that, but it's, you know, I laughed. It was funny. It's one of those things that if you don't have anything else to do and you just kind of want to watch a movie where you don't have to think. It was pretty good. The main character, I can't remember his name. I don't know the name of the actor, but he was great. You know, he's just one of those people that everything he does turns out wrong, always makes the wrong decision, and things just kind of, you know, go bad. So I liked the movie all right. It's one of those things. Not a great movie, but not a bad movie. It was funny. I laughed. Probably not going to watch it again. Let's see. What else? I've just been kind of watching general TV shows. Nothing too exciting. But thanks for the show, guys. And I'll talk to you hopefully next week. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Tad. Night School. That's probably a video for us, but we appreciate the insight. And the actor, I think you couldn't remember, was Kevin Hart. He's been making some movies. He's been making some movies. All right. And thanks again, Tad, for the voicemail. All right. Art, what do you got for Share Time?
Okay. First off, back to Tad. Tad, if you're listening and you said you had to go see a movie at a certain time, if you're still in MoviePass, I suggest you get out. I've gotten out. My friends have gotten out. It's time to get out. We're probably going to cover some more of that later. But out. It's time to get out of MoviePass. Just saying. All right. When you got to work,
put in a lot of work there.
I did. Well, when you got to work to get your money's worth, it shouldn't be work. It should come easily. I don't know. That's just what I'm saying. All right. But Share Time. Okay. So when last we talked, I was on a quest to get caught up in time to watch Daredevil. I failed miserably. I did finish all of Jessica Jones. And I enjoyed it. It was not as good as the first season. On the heels of that, you know, we had the cancellation of Iron Fist, and then we had the cancellation of Luke Cage. I do not believe this has anything to do with, it doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the movies. I think it has to do with the Disney streaming that's looming on the horizon. I think they don't want to continue making shows for something they're not going to be able to hold on to.
I'm not so sure I believe that. But let's talk about that in the news.
Let's talk about that in the news because I
have a news story that relates to that.
Oh, okay. Can't wait to hear it. So I watched all of what did I watch all of? I watched all of Netflix, the Jessica Jones, and I watched all of Hilda. I got all caught up on that. I really enjoyed that. I cannot sing the praises of that enough. It's such a good show. on so many levels. I watched The Dragon Prince. I watched all of The Dragon Prince in basically one sitting. That is the one from the creators of Avatar. Also a very good show. If you liked Avatar, you're going to enjoy this. It was a little slow to start. You could really feel the kind of Avatar roots were a little too strong, and I feel like they found their footing, and they told a good story, and it's a very interesting world, and it's definitely worth watching. I watched more Forged in Fire. I still can't recommend that enough. If you're into competition shows and knives and swords and pole arms and absolutely. can't recommend enough. I am definitely forgetting something. Oh, I started Bleach. It's anime, kind of a young boy has the ability to see ghosts and spirits and kind of gets pulled into this secret society to help fight them and defend his family. And it's a very popular. I've heard about it for years and finally decided to check it out. And so I'm enjoying that. I think I'll probably work through that very quickly. That's about where I'm at. I'll be working through Bleach and continuing on with the final season of Iron Fist and Luke Cage before I get to Daredevil. But we'll see where that's all going. And that's it for my share time.
Okay, so there are certain blockbusters.
No, they're all closed.
Movies.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
I'm not talking about the beginning of Captain Marvel trailer. There are certain blockbusters that I didn't get to the theater to see, and so I've been checking the shelves at Target to see if anyone's come out. And so one came out that I watched last week. So I'm talking about Solo.
Mm.
I finally got around to watching Solo.
Okay.
And in addition to that, I also checked out the Backseat Producers episode where they talked about Solo.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, I can't really disagree with anything that came out of Tony's mouth. In addition to that, Adam's right that Lando or Donald Glover as Lando was probably one of the best things in the movie.
100% agree.
But did you see Solo?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. There was something that was a little bit off for me during some of the movie. It's been widely publicized. This movie's probably got the most press out of most of the movies that have come out this year. About the switching directors and all this other stuff, and it's not as good. But I enjoyed... In the fear of butchering his name, I'm not going to say his name, but the guy who played Han, that was I knew he was going to do a good job. He didn't blow me away, and the whole thing about they felt like they had to make this story, so we knew where Han came from,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing, and I always kind of imagined it better in my head that Han, very paladin-like, freed Chewbacca and a bunch of his tribe mates, and that's where the life debt came from.
Right.
I think once or twice there are references to a life debt that Wookiees will swear to people, but I didn't really see anything in Solo that was like in the realm of a life debt type thing. So I was a little disappointed about that. The crew that he kind of lands with for the train heist, I really like them. And there was definitely a part for me in the movie where I was like, are they just using Rogue One as a template kind of thing? Because you kind of have this crew. I mean, they don't have the Temple Guardian character from Rogue One, but for the most part, I felt like the crews were kind of similar,
mm-hmm.
and then they had kind of off the rails droid,
mm-hmm.
Kind of like how they did in Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they kind of derived from a little bit, and they kind of approved a little bit. And, you know, for me, I felt with, during the Kessel run that it kind of slowed down a little bit because they wanted to make sure that they hit the fan service beats. And when Chewie and Han were in the pilot and navigator seats of the Millennium Falcon, it, you know, there was some fanfare there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, good on them for throwing in something that was kind of weird, and that's the space squid thing.
Mm.
You know. Was not expecting that that was going to be part of the story because, that, you know, that kind of gets into maybe some more of the fringe part of the universe of Star Wars kind of thing. And, you know, when the cameo ends up dropping at the end, I was kind of like, why are they doing this? Why does he have to be in, you know, at the end of the movie? And, of course, they're probably setting up a through line so they can do Han Solo 2. That will probably never happen because Disney has said they're killing these legacy movies. They're kind of, you know, they're going to kind of circle the wagons a little bit and really concentrate on making Episode 9 the best they can be. So there's really no plans for any other movies that, you know, because they talked about having a Yoda movie, having a Boba Fett movie, you know, an Obi-Wan movie kind of thing.
I would have loved a Kenobi movie.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the gems that came out of the Backseat Producers episode was Tony was saying, I think it was Tony, about we don't necessarily need to see the origin story of Obi-Wan. Just
no.
Make a movie about something that, you know, that's something that happened in his life before he met Anakin. I mean, because I guess it would have to be after Qui-Gon died.
Yeah,
because Qui-Gon would have been there. So, but yeah, no, it's but Solo's a lot better than it gets credit for. I actually liked Olivia Clarke as Kira in this movie. I pretty much liked everybody. I felt that, and I'm blank on the guy's name, but the guy played Vision in all the Marvel movies.
Paul Bettany.
Yeah, Paul Bettany. He kind of, his character was kind of shoehorned in. And I didn't think, you know, for probably the first time, I think we didn't really have that effective of a British villain in this movie.
I may be biased. I really like Paul Bettany. So.
I do too. But yeah, it was, he didn't do it for me in this movie.
Okay.
And yeah, it's I really would have liked to have seen. What we would have got if they would have kept the, you know, the Lego movie guys.
Yeah.
On this. Because there was some funny stuff in here. I don't know if they came up with the idea of Lando podcasting while the op is going on. Not the first one, but when they're trying to, you know, when they're trying to get the fuel to pay off the first one.
Right.
And strangely enough, one of the best jokes didn't get talked about on BSP was Lando saying, "I hate you," in which Han replies back, "I know."
Mm-hmm.
that was my favorite joke.
Okay.
But yeah, it's enjoyable. And I think even if you're a Star Wars fan or not a Star Wars fan, I think it's a decent popcorn flick. And, you know, it's kind of hard to not come off as an apologist, but I enjoyed it. And I want to watch it again. Kind of the joy of owning the Blu-ray. So that was Solo. And, you know, for years, I've been an NFL fan. But this year, I've been finding myself turning on the Harry Potter marathons on Sundays.
Okay.
So I've been rewatching a lot of the Harry Potter movies. And, you know, God, is Rickman so good.
Yeah.
Snape.
Yep.
I mean, it's not news or anything, but I just, you know, if I'm out doing something, you know, punching out a game or sleeving cards or doing laundry or any of that stuff, and when Snape comes on the screen, I just like stop, kind of thing. Especially, I just love his little monologue in the first movie talking about potions.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is so good and so sad that he's no longer with us. But these things happen. Also showed my, you know, because there's certain romantic comedies that I enjoy watching with my daughter, even though she's at an age where I can like start showing her more of the more, not necessarily adult stuff, but the, you know, the more like some things in the more recent romantic comedies, like for example, She's Out of My League has hit Netflix. It's a serviceable, I mean, it's not the greatest romantic comedy, but I enjoyed the people in it, and it, you know, it is heartbreaking because, you know, my son's favorite actor is TJ Miller. It's unfortunate that he's kind of gone off the rails a little bit, but it's a good, he turns in a good performance. He's funny in this one. It was a little dicey because there's some dry humping going on and the dog kind of thing. And the, you know, and the shaving of the genitals area kind of thing. So that was a little touch and go, but I enjoy that movie. I'll watch it whenever, you know, just like Harry Potter. I'll watch that whenever it's on. So not really any new movies or anything. As far as TV shows, I haven't been really watching any TV. We've been watching a lot of baseball in this house. So that's probably going to take over for the next week or so, but maybe I'll get back to The Good Place or, the DVR starting to back up again. So, and you know, we're right in the time where a lot of new shows are coming out, and I'll probably find something else to watch instead of what I'm supposed to be watching. So anyways, I'm going to end my share time there. So now we're going to get to our last segment, and that's the news, part of the show where we talk about things that are happening in the world of entertainment.
Okay, so, before we do, the other regular part of the show, you're talking about what you watched has triggered me to remember something that I forgot to mention. The new season of Andy Mack came back. And so I think we're like 2 episodes in. We're watching those live as they drop. Me and Aubrey will watch them together because they come on just before her bedtime. I'm really still enjoying that show. And Disney is doing some good family comedy drama, just really well done, and thoroughly enjoying it and continuing to watch it and happy to continue talking about it. So anybody out there who has young daughters who might enjoy that show, I highly recommend it. Okay, but yes, on to news. My first news story. okay, so we were talking about MoviePass. Attorney General investigates MoviePass. The Office of the New York Attorney General has reportedly launched a probe into Helios and Matheson Analytics, the parent company of movie ticket subscription service MoviePass. Investigators are said to be utilizing an anti-fraud state law known as the Martin Act, one that allows law enforcement agencies to investigate suspected securities fraud and bring civil or criminal charges. Helios and Matheson confirmed the investigation in a statement and say they're fully cooperating with the inquiry. We believe our public disclosures have been complete, timely, and truthful. We have not misled investors. We look forward to the opportunity to demonstrate that to the New York Attorney General. MoviePass reported a whopping $124.6 million operating loss in its June quarter and was hit by a shareholder lawsuit filed in August, which alleged investors suffered losses because they were misled about the company's business and prospects. Additionally, one of its directors, economist Carl Schramm, resigned from the board in August and claimed management had withheld critical financial information and made important decisions without the board's knowledge. So, yeah, MoviePass sinking fast and now under investigation.
All right, so we talked about the we talked about Daredevil, and we're talking about some of the other Netflix shows, two of which have gotten canceled, and two we're talking about Luke Cage and Iron Fist. And we're just assuming that it's because they, you know, Disney wants to move it over to their streaming service.
That is an assumption I have made.
Yeah, well, and I'm not really going to refute that. That I think there's definitely a segment of that. But this first news story is talking about Marvel's other Netflix shows could be in trouble according to new data. And part of the problem is with, like, if we know what ratings are on ABC, right? But Netflix does not release the numbers. So we don't know how the shows are doing.
Well, okay, kind of thing. They don't have to. They're not selling advertising space. They are supporting the movies that they're supporting the shows that are getting the views because they want to they're producing content that they want people to subscribe to get to that content. So they don't have to release. They can put their money wherever they want, whatever they feel best draws people to their service. And since they're not selling ads, they don't have to tell people how many people are watching what. But continue.
Right, but you know, it kind of does lead you to believe on what shows are going to keep and what shows, you know, justifiably they're going to cancel.
Right.
Kind of thing. And so, and we're just used for things that are broadcast, you know, in addition to being able to explain how they're going to charge advertising dollars, to kind of know how, you know, shows are doing kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, so now there's a new report that's going to add fuel to the fires of speculation that Marvel Netflix has done, as it states there are more Marvel Netflix shows on the chopping block, and there's data that proves it. Business Insider is claiming to have the scoop on the statistics that reveal Netflix logic in canceling Luke Cage and Iron Fist, and why more series are about to go get the axe. And so the outlet that they have the data from is called Crimson Hexagon. And so the Netflix abruptly canceled Luke Cage and Iron Fist this month, and the data suggests that Daredevil and Jessica Jones could also be in trouble. And he said posts on Twitter and Instagram decreased significantly after each show's first seasons. And so now what we're starting to see is that people are using social media to track buzz.
Hmm.
Right? So they have the actual numbers work out like this. Luke Cage season 1 had 300,000 social media impressions going into its premiere. By season 2, 50,000. Iron Fist season 1 came in at 120,000. Season 2, 20,000. Jessica Jones season 1, 300,000. Season 2, at about half of that number, 150,000. Daredevil season 1 generated 275,000 impressions. Season 2 had a good holdover of 200,000. And the newly released season 3 had 75,000 going into October, with a higher total expected by month's end. Without any actual viewership numbers, these trends in social media impressions are just about all we have to go on. While the numbers definitely tell the story of decreasing returns, there's some room for debate when it comes to assessing why those figures pan out the way they do. And then they go on with some explanations. But, you know, I've read in other places that basically season 2 for most of the shows were not that good, or they were less good than the first season, which is kind of typical for a TV show kind of thing. But talking about Luke Cage, I mean, and it could be just posturing by those involved, but they couldn't agree on a direction to take season 3, and so they just decided to get rid of the show. Not necessarily that they're gonna recreate it on the Disney streaming service. Coulter has gone on record as saying that he's done playing Luke Cage.
Hmm.
Now, whether that is true or he's posturing for a renegotiation, who knows? But we could be seeing another actor playing Luke Cage if they're gonna bring it over. All right, what do you got next?
Okay, so. I don't know. You've just got me off thinking on a tangent because I remember we talked about when Luke Cage first came out, how someone released numbers, how much more heavily viewed it was than like Daredevil. I'm trying to look up. This was also based on social media, so scratch that. I thought at some point Netflix talked about viewership. And so I don't know. Yeah. If we don't have any actual numbers to go on at any point, then yeah, maybe if they're not getting the viewership on each successive season, then maybe it's not in their best interest to keep supporting it. But I really see that stuff moving over to Disney. I can't see. I don't know. I guess
if they're smart,
it comes up for renewal.
If they're smart, they're going to leave it alone.
Who? Disney?
Disney.
One would think. But at this point.
I was just going to say, let Netflix cancel all 4 shows. And for me, I would try to keep your focus focused to a laser on the streaming service. Just to make sure that you know that you're putting out good content and you're not trying to do too much, which is exactly what happened with Star Wars.
Yeah.
So, but we'll see. We'll see what, you know, what's gonna come out, because it's not just Marvel. I mean, for a Disney streaming service, I think they have to do more than just Star Wars and Marvel.
Oh, they have a ton of Disney content.
Yeah.
I would subscribe to a Disney subscription service in an instant. There's just so much programming that like there's so many shows that I watch that Aubrey watches that if I could just have them all on demand, I would be so happy. You know, all the Star Wars Rebels, just other things they have. For that alone, I would subscribe just to be able to, you know, if they put all the old Clone Wars stuff in there, you know, I mean, they have tons of content that they could say, here you go, watch any season, any episode you want, anytime. I like I said, 10, 15 bucks, I would plop it down immediately. Here are all the Marvel movies. Watch them at any time you like. It's a no-brainer. They don't have to, like, they just have to start somewhere. And they don't need the infrastructure to make a bunch of new shows to add to that in addition to the shows that they're already making. If they just make everything they've already got available, I would subscribe instantly. And I think a lot of people would, you know. So, I don't know. You know, well,
I think from a marketing standpoint, you want to put something on that no one has ever seen, and it's exclusive to the streaming service.
That's not how Marvel started. I mean, not Marvel. That's not how Netflix started. Netflix,
yeah, but they're not Netflix.
They don't have to be Netflix. They're Disney.
No, I understand that, but Netflix started, and so you can watch shows or you can watch TV and movies. That it made it convenient that you wouldn't be able to watch somewhere else, or it'd be cheaper to watch somewhere else.
Right.
Netflix did not start making their own content.
Right. No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So Disney doesn't have to either. They don't even have to charge a lot. Let's say Disney doesn't make anything new. They say, here you go. Here's our subscription service. It's $5, and it's just our back catalog. It isn't anything new. It isn't anything different. It's just all this stuff that we've got sitting out there that you don't have to wrangle to find. It's just all there. It's got a bunch of kids stuff the kids want to watch because of the Disney Channel. It's got a bunch of stuff that the geeks want to watch because of Marvel and Star Wars. Tell me you wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
Let me jump into my next story.
Okay,
and
sure.
Okay, so this is from TheVerge.com. Why the golden age of streaming could be coming to an end.
Okay, tell me this one.
Big media companies are getting a lot bigger. AT&T and Time Warner are in the business of merging. Despite the Department of Justice's best efforts and Disney finally beat out Comcast for control of 21st Century Fox, of course, Comcast already owns NBC Universal and Illumination Studios, proud home of the Minions franchise, so it's not doing too bad on its own. Nearly every company is getting bigger and more vertically integrated. At the same time, nearly every company that makes video is finding its way into the streaming media business. Disney is planning its own Netflix competitor for 2019, backed by content holdings like Marvel, Lucasfilm, and Pixar. Mm-hmm. AT&T plans to launch its own Time Warner focused equivalent around the same time. Similar competitors from Amazon and Comcast are already taking shape. With the streaming subscription business growing this fast, everyone wants a piece and they're ready to fight for it. That fight will also have real implications for consumers as studios pull back licensed content and silo it into paid subscriptions. Mm-hmm. Right now, a single Netflix subscription will get you Marvel movies and DC shows alongside in-house originals. But soon, both of those may leave for parent company subscription at Disney and Time Warner, respectively. It's a kind of streaming cold war as each company tries to leverage its own franchises into a standalone subscription bundle. It's too early to say exactly what it will look like, but it could be good news for specific fandoms with skinny bundles letting you zero in on all the Star Trek or Lucasfilm content. But if you're the kind of person who likes to keep up on everything, get ready to pay a lot more monthly fees. And so the only point I was trying to make is that with all the choices that we're going to have for streaming services, Disney has to have something new that's exclusive to Disney.
I disagree. When you look at, I forgot about Pixar. I forgot about Studio Ghibli. Like, just for the Studio Ghibli stuff, I would pay. I have a bunch of that. I own a bunch of those Blu-rays. There are a bunch that I don't own, and I would watch immediately. So yeah, I don't know what their business model is going to be. But I think they have enough content to start the way Netflix started. There's a podcast called Business Wars, and it's really good. And it takes, you know, kind of startups and kind of like big giants of the industry that kind of battled at each other, PlayStation versus the Nintendo, Coke versus Pepsi. And one of them is kind of Netflix versus Blockbuster. And it talks about how Netflix got its start. And they went around scrounging for whatever content they could find when they were starting a streaming service. They licensed any and everything they could get their hands on. And it was just content that was out there. It was a lot of weird stuff, a lot of different stuff, a lot of, you know, stuff you would never actually watch. But they wanted to have as much content available as possible. It's a very interesting story. And I think Disney has that. Their catalog has that type of leverage with all the different things that we're talking about between Star Wars and Disney and Pixar and Studio Ghibli and all the stuff on the Disney Channel. There are three different Disney channels. There's Disney, Disney XD, Disney Junior. They are producing a crap ton of content. And if I was able to access it all in one place, I would seriously be a happy camper. I can't stress that enough.
Well, I mean, they've already announced one thing. I think that Star Wars show, The Mandalorian, I think is going to be on the streaming service.
Yeah.
That's something that's what I'm talking about.
I will be in as soon as it's available. I will subscribe. I will want to see what's there. I'll be fully invested. Okay. I mean, we're a hand's breadth away from just doing Netflix and Hulu and getting rid of cable. I think between Netflix, Hulu, and Disney, we would just get rid of cable completely. So, but I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll see. Okay, on to other things. where was I? Oh, so this caught my eye. Shazam reshoot dates. That wasn't really the interesting part of the story. I was reading the story over because anything with Shazam, and it's going to catch my eye because I'm really excited to see where this goes. But speculation online has already begun that Henry Cavill may shoot a Superman cameo, even as trade reports have indicated that Cavill is done with the role. Shazam remains on track to open in cinemas on April 5th. April 5th, my birthday, 2019. I cannot be more excited. And that I don't know. So maybe things are still lining up. I know that we had reported in the past that he was definitely out, and now he may be back in. So I would be totally excited to see Superman on screen with Shazam and to see what they do with that. My birthday cannot come soon enough.
Okay. You probably heard that they're pushing back Wonder Woman 1984.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I saw somebody else was taking that spot.
So here we have from Dark Horizons, Terminator versus Charlie's Angels date set. So they're saying in the wake of the delay, that slot that movie that Wonder Woman's going to be in has suddenly become the site of a game of chicken between two major event films. Last night, Sony Pictures quickly slotted in its Charlie's Angels reboot for that now clear November 1st, 2019 release date. Today, Paramount and Skydance Media have moved up the James Cameron-produced Terminator refresh by 2 weeks to that November 1st date. So, both films are action-heavy, have mostly women in the lead roles, and both franchises have previously had films directed by McGee. However, Terminator is expected to be R-rated and skew towards older men, while Angels is a likely PG-13 rated young female focused feature. Both are also important titles to their respective studios, both of which are in need of big tentpole hits. Will one blink? And on kind of a side story is that Wonder Woman moving out of November, episode 9 Star Wars is going to be huge. because there's really nothing else going up against it.
Is Cameron back at the helm for that one?
No. It says produced.
Then I think Charlie's Angels should stick to their guns. Yeah. I don't have high hopes for that.
Yeah.
All right. Cannes and Netflix may settle their feud. So we reported numerous times on the feud between Netflix and the Cannes Film Festival. that was back in May. So Netflix didn't like their rule that any movie to play at Cannes has to have a French theatrical run and can't be streamed for 3 years afterwards. So they pulled out of the fest. In doing so, they yanked Alfonso Cuarón's film Roma from the potential lineup and instead premiered it at Venice. Roma has since drawn some of the best reviews of the year and has emerged as a serious Best Picture contender, as have a few other Venice Film Festival launchers, whilst the Cannes titles, not so much. Speaking with French outlet Le Point this week, Cannes director Thierry Frémaux discussed the impasse and says the festival could soon be coming to a truce with the streaming giant so as not to render themselves obsolete with their stubborn steadfastness. Frémaux confirms in the interview that Netflix execs Ted Sarandos and Scott Stuber both came to the Lumiere Film Festival recently, co-run by Frémaux, to discuss the future relationship with Cannes. Richard Patry, president of the National Federation of French Cinema, was also in the discussion, which aims to figure out how Netflix can bring some of their high-profile films to next year's festival. So they tanked this year. Netflix had the best movie, and they're looking to kiss up and make amends. Good for them. It's good of you to admit when you're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I got overly excited about this next one, and I was sorely disappointed. Okay, so the headline says, DiCaprio Scorsese officially set for Moon. And I was like, Moon?
Yeah.
You're talking about Duncan Jones' first movie with Sam Rockwell? Oh, no. They're talking about that they're going to be doing an adaptation of the book Killers of the Flower Moon. And I could not be more wrong. The story is set in 1920s Oklahoma when the Native American Osage Nation were the richest people per capita in the world after oil was discovered under their land. Then they were murdered one by one, and the newly created FBI took up the case, discovering a chilling conspiracy. So, yeah, it sounds like an Oscar bait kind of thing, but not what I was expecting. So, oh well.
Very sad.
Yeah.
All right, in the corner of totally what I was expecting and made me very happy, the trailer has been released for Joe Cornish's Kid Who Would Be King. Years after the release of Attack on the Block, which helped launch the careers of John Boyega and Jodie Whittaker, filmmaker Joe Cornish returns with a new Arthurian legend in contemporary times fantasy, The Kid Who Would Be King. In the film, Alex thinks he's just another nobody until he stumbles upon the mythical sword in the stone, Excalibur. Now he must unite his friends and enemies into a band of knights and together with legendary wizard Merlin take on the wicked enchantress Morgana. My name's Arthur. I've always loved Arthurian legend. And a modern-day retelling of The Boy Who Would Be King, I'm totally down for.
All right, so here's my last story.
All right.
And it comes from crack.com. So buckle in, folks. The headline, Behold, the most important 1980s action movie study ever. Just like every classic 80s action hero, Dolph Lundgren's resume is littered with ups and downs. For every Rocky IV, there is a Kindergarten Cop 2. For every Expendables, there is a Fat Slags. And for every Universal Soldier, there is a Sharknado 5, global swarming. It kind of makes us wish that there was a way of figuring out what makes a perfect Lundgren movie. We could pass it along to the man himself and ensure that his star never fades. Luckily for us, then, someone did exactly that. The answer is, it's all in the front kicks, baby. According to Reddit user Lundgren's Front Kick, movies in which Dolph delivers a front kick tend to have higher critical scores and make more money than films that are devoid of front kicks.
Okay.
How did they figure this out? By living the dream and watching Lundgren movies all day, noting down the ones where he delivers a front kick or at least a variation of it, and then comparing the average box office grosses and review scores taken from, of course, Rotten Tomatoes, of those movies against those in the ones in which Dolph delivers no front kicks. The result? If you're writing an action movie for Lundgren and want to make bank, including a front kick, boost your review score by 10% and your domestic box office gross by nearly double on average. So, bullet point number one, movies featuring Dolph Lundgren throwing a variation of a front kick. Tomato meter average 34.8. Inflated domestic box office 66 million. So we have Red Scorpion, Showdown Little Tokyo, Universal Soldier, The Expendables 2. And then they have front kick movies, Red Scorpion, The Punisher, Showdown Little Tokyo. Then you have Universal Soldier, Day of Reckoning, and then Skin Trade. Two, movies featuring zero front kicks, 24.2% on the tomato meter. So the domestic box office, 34 million. Masters of the Universe, Johnny Mnemonic, Expendables 3. And then they also throw in The Peacekeeper, Don't Kill It, and Black Water. Of course, there are a couple limitations to the this method. Lundgren's front kick didn't include Rocky IV and Universal Soldier Regeneration in their dataset. The former, because it seemed unfair to count the movie, seeing his front kicks aren't allowed in boxing.
Going to bring up Rocky IV.
Drago may embrace steroids, but I don't think he would dishonor himself by throwing a deadly front kick at Rocky during their boxing match. While the latter doesn't have a score on Rotten Tomatoes and so couldn't be counted. Lundgren's front kick also noted that they're using a wide definition of front kick, which martial arts purists probably wouldn't agree with. Even so, it's hard to critique their work, considering that it's a study into whether Dolph Lundgren has magic movie king-making feet. It's all for fun, ultimately, but on the off chance there's something to this, make sure your wife's not listening to this, but on the off chance there's something to this, then good news, Dolph. It's not too late to save Pups Alone, A Christmas Peril. Bad news, though, you're probably going to have to kick a Labrador in the face.
Oh, I'm sure there's some villain in there he can kick instead of a puppy. I'm sure.
What do you got left?
ADR in a little front kick. That was pretty good. You're going to
follow that?
Yeah, well, I was going to go dark, but now I'm going to go light. I'm gonna nix the Netflix denies targeting users by race, and I'm gonna move over to a new Mary Poppins Returns sneak peek. So with no Marvel or Star Wars films this fall, I had not realized that was happening. So I'm very disappointed. Disney Pictures is putting all of its efforts into its two family fantasy features opening this fall. While Nutcracker and the Four Realms is a risk, relatively speaking, the five-decade-later sequel, Mary Poppins Returns, could not be more of a sure bet. Emily Blunt takes on the iconic role from P.L. Travers' book, made famous by Julie Andrews in the original 1964 film. Rob Marshall helms the film, set in 1930s London, as Jane Banks, Emily Mortimer, and Michael Banks, Ben Whishaw, are now grown up, with Michael still living in the house on Cherry Tree Lane, with his three children and a housekeeper named Ellen. After Michael suffers a personal loss, Mary Poppins comes back to the Banks family with street lamplighter Jack, Lin-Manuel Miranda, an eccentric cousin, topsy-turvy Meryl Streep. Julie Walters, Dick Van Dyke, Angela Lansbury, and Colin Firth also co-star in the film, which is slated to open in cinemas December 19th. I'm very excited for this. So that is my last news story on a very light note.
Yeah, I'm somewhat excited, even though it's more strip mining of things that shouldn't be.
But it's not a reimagining. It's not a reboot. It is a sequel. It is, 30 years later.
Same difference.
Okay, fine. Be that way.
It's got Mary Poppins as a title. That should not be. Anyways.
Okay.
Give me something original.
Nobody is stealing your childhood. You can still go back and watch the original Mary Poppins.
I am not saying they're stealing my childhood.
Okay. That's the vibe I'm getting.
They have talented people. Why do we need to, it's kind of like with Solo. You know that certain people, nothing's going to happen to certain people. Not that I was expecting anything to happen in a musical coming from Disney, but it's kind of they're problems with sequels. That's all I'm saying.
You can't kill off Mary Poppins. She's integral to the story. Okay, I got you.
Well,
I'm feeling.
And she might be She might be Fae or something. Who knows? Anyways, probably can't die. All right. Anyways,
she's probably a witch.
Or she could be a Highlander. Anyway,
she's a witch.
Oh, I get a little personal, aren't we? Okay. Anyways, so on that note, speaking of musical, we will end this episode of Backseat Box Office. So everyone, thank you for listening. Our website is backseatproducers.com, where on the left column you can find our voicemail number, so you can tell us what you've been watching. The voicemail number, 618-207-4794. Not only can you find episodes of this show, you can also find episodes of Backseat Producers, like episode number 461, where they discussed the movie Boyhood. Episode 460, they talked about Black Klansman. So not only do they do some older movies, they also do some new releases too. So anyways, so again, our website is backseatproducers.com. So with that, again, thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time. Art, what do you want to say?
Go see a movie, give us a call, and good night, everybody.